Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
You think you know,
but you have no idea.
This is the Diary of Back Issue.
November 2nd, 2020.
Beyonce, you look like Luther Vandross.
Oh, but make it fashion.
But you ain't heard that from me.
Fierce.
Calm. Can't stop.
You see, when you do clownery, the clown comes back to bite.
I ain't gonna sleep because of y'all.
It's Britney, bitch.
Y'all not gonna get no sleep because of me.
But I ain't wanna gossip. I don't
Who said that?
Welcome to Back Issue, a weekly podcast that revisits formative moments in pop culture that we still think about.
This week, I'm Tracy Clayton, and welcome to my crib. This is where all the magic happens.
I want my MTV!
This is the true story.
7 strangers
picked to live in a loft.
All win because I worked at Hooters and now my Hooters work for me.
First, y'all gotta walk to Queens and give me a sugar cookie.
Each week, we'll go back into the past and revisit unforgettable moments we all think we remember
and learn what they can teach us about where we are now.
I'm Tracy Clayton.
And I'm Josh Quinn. Okay, so Trace.
Yeah.
I know that you loved MTV. As much as I loved MTV.
I did, of course. Yes.
So for some people, it was a place where you could get music videos. Do you remember what a music video is?
A music video is that thing that's in like first aid kits, right? You like rub them together and you like clear. Is that what a music video is?
A defibrillator. Yes. But for pop culture.
Yes. Okay.
Got us all excited. I feel like there was a 4-year span where all I did was watch music videos. Mm. But MTV was more than just music. It had another card up its sleeve that spoke to all of us. We were all obsessed.
What was that card?
Reality TV.
I love reality TV.
Oh, True Life.
The Real World.
Room Raiders.
Ew, The Next Bus.
It's
so nasty.
We're going to get into a lot of these shows today, but as usual, we have a lot to say about MTV in the 90s and the early aughts, but I think that later we should bring in someone who was there,
woohoo,
who can speak as an insider, friend of the pod, Erica Clark, who is now the executive producer of original content and development at Spotify, and who spent 10 years at MTV.
She is a legend. I'm sure she has Odyssey. I am very, very hyped.
But first, let's take a moment and talk about how MTV was that girl. So, if you've ever watched any of those documentary shows about the decades because you were pretending to be sick to stay at home from school or work, then you probably know about the beginning of MTV.
So, MTV was launched in the fall of 1981, which is 1 year before yours truly decided to be born. You're welcome.
Come on, decision.
I mean, I was just like, you know what? This womb is cozy and all, but let me make things worse and go see what they do.
What a bad choice.
So, the channel was launched with the image of the Apollo 11 moon landing. You remember that with the little flag on the moon? It's all my descriptors for that. It was a new concept because it combined, quote, the best of TV with the best of radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll.
Fittingly, the first music video that ever played on MTV was Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles. And they hired VJs, which were like the cross between a DJ and a TV host.
MTV at the time relied really heavily on a rock format, which excluded a lot of black artists, except for those whose influence was too big to ignore, right? So those who had like, quote unquote, crossed over, think Michael Jackson, Donna Summer, Prince, that type.
Yeah, it was so bad that even white folks like David Bowie were like, yo, there is a problem.
It occurred to me, having watched MTV over the last few months, I'm just floored by the fact that there's so few black artists featured on it. Why is that?
I think that we're trying to move in that direction. We want to play artists that seem to be doing music that fits into what we want to play for MTV. There's the company is thinking in terms of narrow casting.
That's evident.
Did you catch it? The shady?
Well, he was like, that's obvious. Or whatever. I mean, clearly. And like the fact that this is like a white man, yes, but a British white man, which is like the whitest white man.
Right.
He's just like, y'all messing up. But you know what? That's a whole nother episode. We need a lifetime to talk about all of media's racism. So today we're going to focus on MTV's shift toward reality TV programming. This began in the early 90s when they stopped being polite
and start getting real.
The real world.
In 1992. True story. Shout out to John in that damn cowboy hat.
I remember being obsessed with The Real World.
Instantly.
Obsessed. MTV with The Real World opened up this idea of bearing your soul, being authentic, means becoming famous.
Right.
What was your favorite season of The Real World, Tracy?
My favorite, I feel like mine changes all the time, but most of the time it's Vegas with Ireland and Alton.
That first episode where Steven and Trishel, aka Trashel, and Bryn were having basically like a threesome in a hot tub.
We're in the hot tub naked. We're just chilling naked in the hot tub. It's all good. Next thing we know, here comes all three guys with towels around their waist.
In that petri dish of a hot tub, it was just like human body fluid soup. It just, to this day, I'm nauseous right now thinking about it. And when I saw that, I was like, this season is gonna
be a mess.
Something else. Yes, absolutely.
So, according to the story by ABC News in 2008, the hot tub as a trope became a staple of The Real World production since season two. Details Magazine reported that hot tub sales in the United States more than doubled each year from 1996 to 2006.
You know what?
People wanted to have what Bryn, Trishel, and Steven did.
I did want the hot tub, but that's where it stops for me.
Then there was like Karamo on The Real World Philadelphia in 2002.
Oh, that neither.
Okay, so disclaimer. We're going to ignore that awful t-shirt that he wore on the red carpet.
Oh, that's the N-word shirt?
Yeah, it said...
Oh, my God.
Nigga with an A crossed out. Then it said nigger with an E-R crossed out. And then at the bottom it said neither.
And then the whole internet was like, neither.
Girl! But one thing that you can't take away from Karamo is that he was a lot of people's first time seeing black queer masculinity on television.
Yes.
And there's this moment that I remember from that show. He goes on a date with Shavonda, which is one of his castmates. And mm-hmm. he ends up coming out to her on the date.
But no, I'm gay. Come on.
Okay. No way.
So it's crazy. Dead ass. So it's always like the biggest thing. Always.
No way.
Seriously.
I would have never guessed.
You can see the whiplash in her face when she's like, wait, what? And then there were these two white boy bro-y cast members, and they asked Karamo if he's ever been to a gay club. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, all the time. I go all the time.
Yeah.
You're not. Are you homosexual?
Yeah, I'm gay.
Their faces would have been a meme. Like, their jaws are on the ground. They cannot believe that this black man in a fitted is queer, you know?
Oh my gosh, I remember that, but I have to say that one of my favorite people of the entire franchise.
The Real World Road Rules Cinematic Universe.
Yes. Yes, all of that where like they collide in like this big ass Marvel versus DC movie.
Right.
It was just like so out. My favorite to this day. See if you can guess who it is, okay? I don't wrestle. I fucking beat bitches up.
Come on, Coral.
Coral the queen. Queen Coral. My favorite.
MTV was really it in terms of pioneering reality TV for the youth, mm-hmm. then, for the children.
The cheering.
Yeah. But I also think we cannot do this episode without at least mentioning TRL.
Shout out to TRL and everybody who's probably still in Times Square waiting for Carson Daly to come look at the window.
Wait.
Hi, my name is Vanessa. I'm from Idlesville, Pennsylvania, and I'm here because I love the Backstreet Boys. Woo! You gotta have the woo. The woo was a punctuation.
That was good. That was good. I always wish I could have gone to a taping of TRL, but I never got a chance.
Also, you know what I did not realize?
What?
Is how many people either got their start as MTV VJs or they were MTV VJs at one point in their careers.
50-11 people.
A whole mess of them.
Yeah.
A mess of them. There was Carson Daly, mm-hmm. Carmen Electra, mm-hmm. Adrian Byline, which I still do not remember. Daisy Fuentes.
God, remember Daisy Fuentes?
Those cheekbones. And she is still just so just perfect. Also, Tyrese.
Shout out to Ananda Lewis.
I love her so much.
I feel like VJs and video vixens were like these sort of like proto influencers, a staple of a time gone by. Like literally everybody wanted to be them. Mm-hmm. We wanted to look like them. We wanted to see what they were wearing, what was trendy, what was hot.
They were the first Instagram girls.
Exactly.
MTV really was everything when you think about it. Like
everything.
They changed so much of pop culture. So much so that the problem that I'm having is like there's just too much to cover. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, do we cover the VMAs?
Mm-hmm.
Do we just talk about the music videos?
Remember all of the like animated shows that they had?
Oh my God. Okay, Daria, okay. Beavis and Butthead.
Let's just pick a place to start, right? So
okay.
We talking about MTV.
Right.
MTV is youth culture.
Right.
Youth culture is the adolescence, more or less, right?
Right.
And what
right.
is more important to the adolescence than dating, hugs, kissing, trying to get some, flirting, et cetera. MTV was very heavily invested in this genre of show.
Right. There were so many dating shows. I think starting with in 1995, you had Singled Out with Jenny McCarthy.
Oh my gosh, I used to love Singled Out, and I think it's because I was really impressed by how she like manhandled this big ass group of terrible, awful men.
Uh-huh.
She would let them know, like, yo, don't fucking disrespect me like that. And I was just like, yeah, you better do it, Jenny. They were the worst.
I mean, so many people on these shows were the worst. Like, I can't believe that these shows happened. Room Raiders.
Ugh.
Remember that show? And the Blacklight?
Yeah, so these were literally messy, disgusting, gross shows. I don't want to see the stains of your bodily fluid illuminated in any color.
Or Date My Mom. Remember that show?
Yes, I wish I didn't. I really do. And then there was Parental Control.
Oh my God. I hated that. But the messiest one. The messiest.
I already know what you're gonna say.
The messiest of all of them was Next.
Ugh.
Dating. It's brutal, right? And think about how much more brutal it's become with the apps.
Ugh.
Have they helped us at all?
No.
But MTV's level of brutality that they produced with the show Next.
Mm.
Imagine you're on Tinder, right?
I already hate it, but yes. I'm
And you can see every single time that somebody swipes left on you. That's what Next was.
That's awful.
Right. So on the show, there's one person who's going on a date with several people. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is on the Next bus. And they get out and they introduce themselves. And the amount of money that each dater gets is directly tied to how long they survive the date, which...
Rude.
I mean, a lesson. That's a lesson that you could teach people.
Gotta get that free meal.
But there was this one time where there was this girl named Charity.
Uh-huh.
And obviously the premise of the show is that she has to compete against these four other girls for some random dude. But her biggest opponent ended up being Gravity.
Oh, no.
Charity, you're next.
Okay, let's start at the visual, Tracy. Okay, so.
Okay.
Charity is a product of her time. She might have a bump it. She definitely has a MySpace mm-hmm. scene haircut.
With like the little emo clip-in extension
mm-hmm. piece. And the PC highlights.
That's it. Yeah.
And she falls out of the bus.
Now it's...
And she walks
just, like,
over.
Slides down.
Just
on
slides
her
down. And then she walks over to her potential date, who literally says...
I just wanted to make sure you're okay. Next.
She lasted 17 seconds... on this date
she
and
got
$1. Do you know how pissed I'd be?
See, if they cared about that girl, they'd have been like, you know what, let's do this over.
Okay, but they don't. And the reason that you can tell that they don't is because they allow her to freestyle poorly in front of her potential date, which zaps any sort of sympathy that I have for her.
Hey, homie, I'm your ghetto friendly surprise. You should have recognized with my exotic look and my erotic ways. You would have tried me out in different ways. So peace out. I'm out.
Beat it, Biggie Smalls.
I can't believe I fell and busted my ass and he didn't even give me a chance.
I probably loved this episode when I saw it.
This show was built off of humiliation.
Absolutely.
It was built off of how bad and awkward do these people feel in this situation?
And then there was that one episode. It was one of the gay episodes. This particular episode featured a goth guy named Thomas mm-hmm. who is about to meet a figure skater named Manny.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm Thomas.
Manny.
Hi.
Next.
Oh, are you serious?
Very.
God, f*** you.
Thomas's rock star looks left him feeling punked.
Wow.
I would sue.
Yo, this show was a mess.
Brutal.
The fact that we were being sent the message that it's okay to like instantly read someone and
right.
instantly judge them is kind mm-hmm. of, it doesn't sit well. It doesn't age well.
Especially when white people's favorite quote is Martin Luther King's, you're supposed to not judge people by the color of their skin. That whole thing.
Shh. Don't remind white people of Martin Luther King. They're going to start mentioning
right,
him whenever
right.
they can out of context.
They're doing it right now.
I must say, though, my favorite moment of the Next experience mm-hmm. is when the contestants come off the bus. It freeze frames.
Yes.
And then three random facts pop up on the screen about them.
Right.
They're just three random ass facts.
They're so random and they all sound so fake.
So let's revisit some.
Okay.
And we're going to take turns and we're going to see if we would next these people.
Okay.
Or just kick it.
Okay.
Just kick it.
Just kick it.
Every man needs a woman.
You know what?
Okay, I'm going to go first.
Okay.
His name is Matt. Mm-hmm. Has a chronic sweating problem. Mm. He's offended by people who eat veal. Had sex while talking on the phone to his church pastor.
Question. Need some clarification on that last one. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm, does that mm-hmm, mean mm-hmm. that he had sex with his church pastor while he was talking on the phone, or he had sex with someone else while he was on the phone with his church pastor?
I think it's the latter, not the former.
Well, either way, I mean, this is no. I just wanted to.
He was one of the hot guys.
Yeah, that's all. It's one of the beats. I'm going to say no. And honestly, it's not even the pastor part. It's the sweating part for me. Next up, we have Pierce.
I like the name Pierce.
You like the name Pierce?
I do.
Oh. Because of Pierce Brosnan?
Exactly. You know me so well.
Not mad at it. Okay, Pierce. works at Outback. He's never been on a plane, and he dated a guy with a colostomy bag.
He would absolutely not get a next from me at the beginning. Uh-huh. From the get-go, I'm seeing Outback, I'm seeing blooming onions.
I'm seeing that pumpernickel bread.
You know?
That's when I was like, yeah, we're gonna kick it. You got the hookup, the Outback? Shit.
And he dated a guy with a colostomy bag. Like, that says to me that he is not
he superficial got a good heart.
And he has a good heart.
Exactly.
And he deserves a chance. Okay, one more, Tracy. Mm-hmm. His name is Brett. He hates hand sanitizer. He's obsessed with
Next.
Nicole.
It's a pandemic. Things are different now.
Okay.
Go ahead, though. I want to hear the rest.
So he hates hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. He's obsessed with Nicole Richie, and he pees outside wherever he can.
So the whenever part, the pees outside whenever he can, makes me feel like we're going to be at the park somewhere, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's just like, yo, man, I don't really have to pee right now, but...
But I want to.
Is really want to pee right now.
These two things can't go together.
Nah.
They can't go together.
Exactly.
How you pee outside whenever you want, but you don't use hand sanitizer, Brett.
No, you have to go. You have to go. That was fun.
That was a fun game.
That's why we're still single. Because we missed it, everybody. So besides the dating shows, we also have to talk about another game show.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you remember it. I don't know. It was called Punk'd.
There were so many iconic moments on Punk.
So many.
Britney Spears rapping to Ashton Kutcher.
I take that back. I'm just tricking, you see? Because when I show my belly, everybody copies me. Yeah, it's
yeah,
kind of cool.
Do.
Not that they're cowards, but I'm just Britney Spears and I got all this power.
Beyonce looking at her nails after knocking down that Christmas tree in front of all them kids.
Beyonce, why did you ruin our Christmas?
And she just looked at her nails like,
she just smiling.
Zach Braff beating that kid's ass for spray painting his new car.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa!
That was the episode when I was like, all right, somebody's gonna get hurt doing this shit. Then there was that time when Missy was in that jewelry store and she was standing on top of a glass display case.
They acted like they lost her jewelry. She was not okay.
And she was like, you got to the count of 10 before I get up here and break your whole shit.
You need to bring it down. Okay.
Don't think you need to put your finger, your hand back.
Let's just wait.
Is put your hand, bring your hand back.
No, but you're inside of my store. Okay, and I'm getting your jewelry back.
Okay,
I'm going to get it back to you. Do you understand that?
Why would you ever punk Missy Elliott? Like, I'm not trying to get on that bad side ever in my life.
That sounds like awful karmic energy.
Exactly.
But I think it's time we take it back to the roots. The thing that MTV was known for.
What?
Music.
Remember music? I too love a music video. You know, I really do. I love them back in the day. But the first thing I think of when I think of MTV and music is Making the Band. Oh my gosh. Top quality drama.
We used to have watching parties for Making the Band.
Yes.
But Making the Band didn't start on MTV. It started on ABC. And they made this band called O-Town,
uh-huh,
who had the songs like Liquid Dreams and All or Nothing at All.
'Cause I want it all. On nothing at all.
But then MTV took over Making the Band, uh-huh, and they gave it to Diddy, who decided to start it off with a group that he would call The Band, which was an ensemble. It had Sarah, who was a vocalist.
Uh-huh.
It had Ness, who was...
He's the East Coast rapper. He was the one that sounded like a Timberland boot and a hoodie.
A Timberland boot and a
yes.
hoodie. It had Choppa, who was like No Limit. It had Babs, who was the female Timberland boot with the heel from from that era.
Uh-huh. Boots with the heel.
And then it had Dylon.
Five Dylon.
And it was really great. But when I think of Making the Band, I think of the next season, which is actually when he started the group Danny DeKay.
Also top quality drama.
They have had a lot of breakups and a lot of makeups.
They have been through it.
They've been through it and through it and through it. But they started their relationship by going through it and through it and through it.
That's true.
The thing that lives rent-free in my mind from Making the Band 3,
mm-hmm,
people loved talking about Aubrey O'Day.
Yeah.
They loved talking about Don Richard. They loved talking about Diddy. They love talking about D Woods sometimes. But my favorite person was Boom Boom Cat, aka Lorianne Gibson.
A Boom Cat. cat.
Boom, boom, cat. So boom, the internet cat. Named her boom, 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 cat because of her way of expressing counts. Instead of going one and two and three and four, she used to make sounds, boom, boom, cat, ba-boom, ba-boom, cat, which I totally understand. And she started her career as a fly girl. She was on In Living Color.
Shout out to In Living Color.
Hey, and she was a choreographer who worked with like Michael Jackson, Alicia Keys, Beyonce. She was even Lady Gaga's creative director for a while. Mm. And she was the director of choreography for Bad Boy Records. And let me tell you, her and Puff used to put those girls through it.
Oh my God.
I have a very, very vivid memory of her making the girls who would become Danny DeCane audition and dance over and over and over to the choreography set to 1-2 Step.
It was getting frustrating.
What is that?
What is going on up there?
How are you gonna learn 10 songs?
This is when I was like, oh, I couldn't be a dancer. I already knew I couldn't be a dancer. I didn't need the confirmation. But I was just like, leave them alone. Let them sit down.
Yeah.
I always think of when Diddy fired on live TV, Dee Woods and Aubrey O'Day on live TV.
So I don't want you in the group no more. And anybody else that want to go with her could go with her. Based on a lot of things that I've heard, you're not really a happy camper in this situation.
No, I don't think anyone has been happy for a long time in this situation.
Okay, so you could go too.
And with that, it was over.
I remember being like, is this real? Mm. Do they really not have jobs anymore? Is Danny DeCane really over?
And you know what? I feel like today will not be the last time that you utter those words.
Exactly. But after Making the Band 3, you had Making the Band 4, which featured an all-boy group called Day 26.
Or as I like to call them, Willie and the rest of them.
Really and the boys?
Yes, Willie and the boys. Aside from Willie just being gorgeous, something that I always think about when I think of Day 26.
I know where this is going.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do. It's one of my favorite moments, not just in Day 26 history, not just in Making the Band history. It's one of my favorite reality show moments of all time, period.
I think it's in my top five for sure.
Absolutely. It was the sing-off, the battle sing-off, where you got the original Day 26 members in the house. Diddy brings in some more dudes to kind of like shake them up, you know what I'm saying? Like get them a little scared. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, we're going to have a sing-off.
None of you are safe.
Exactly. And then this man, I just remember cornrows and like a white tank top. And he starts singing Gone by NSYNC, but he does it as if he's like battle rapping. So we got like the hip-hop hands. Right.
I see Brian, he's stepping up in front of me. I ain't no punk, so I'm gonna step up in front of him.
There's a thousand words that I could say to make you come home, yeah.
And then he would try to like ad-lib at the end. And I was just like, what is he doing?
But my favorite part of this clip is when the boys responded on the other side of the table.
Yes.
And they were ready for this challenge. Like they were going to war. And they're going to war singing
Listen.
End of the Road by Boyz II Men. There's people in the back like, woo, just hitting that.
Woo.
You belong to me. I belong to
you. Although we go
to the end of. And then the little short dude in the front just like goes off at the end. He's just like, yeah. You better do it.
It was everything I've ever wanted in a reality television moment in my life.
Do you think that we're ever going to have a moment like that again in reality TV?
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
But none of these shows lasted as long as The Behemoth, Cribs, which started in 2000 and outlasted all your faves, still running to this day, even though now it's on Snapchat.
People still use Snapchat? Well, shout out to them.
I will never forget the Mariah Carey Cribs.
Oh my gosh. That is like, talk about aspirational. That is the time where I was like, okay, all right, I'm trying to be this one right here.
We have a little gold leaf designs on the floor. That's a little M behind you. See that?
I'm trying to be this one right here.
The closet.
Yes.
The walls that were glazed like kids. The most comfortable couch in all the land.
And the stair stepper.
Yes!
In them heels.
Mm-hmm.
You don't work. You, that's not how you use that, Mariah. Is that how you do that? And she was just like, yes, it is. And I was just like, teach me.
I love all of these big, glitzy, glamorous episodes mm-hmm. of Cribs. Mm-hmm. But I gotta say, one of the best, like top two episode maybe,
uh-huh.
is Red Man. Showing us
yes!
his two-bedroom Staten Island apartment.
Regular, degular, schmegular.
Regular, degular, schmegular nigga shit.
Okay.
Is what it was. He had a cousin sleep on the floor. And I was like, you know what? I see myself.
I get
on
it.
On MTV.
I get it.
Finally.
Real nigga shit.
Exactly.
Got my ironing board right here. You know, we iron on the floor in here. You know, it's easy to iron and watch TV at the same time.
He was giving us authenticity.
Yeah, and he was also, like, in retrospect, highlighting, like, we just, we're regular people.
It was a critique of capitalism, Tracy.
Bam. That's, see, that is what I was trying to say. She was like, you're right.
Tracy, I could spend all day talking about Cribs, but I think it's time that we ask someone who knows a little bit more than we do. So, after the break, we're going to talk to Erica Clark, who's currently the executive producer at Spotify Studios, but she spent 10 years at MTV and worked on some of the most iconic episodes of Diary, including Aaliyah. After the break.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
And I want to tell you about a podcast I think you're going to love.
Who Weekly is a podcast about everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't.
Does celebrity news stress you out?
Are there too many people you've literally never heard of?
Check out Who Weekly, a podcast hosted by Lindsay Weber and me, Bobby Finger.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we'll answer the most burning listener queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly on the Odyssey app or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Do you wake up in a cold sweat from your work dreams?
Have a coworker who keeps inviting you to do escape rooms?
Can't get a coworker to agree to do escape rooms?
Or are you just genuinely not sure how to take the next step in your career?
I'm Kate.
And I'm Kim. And together we run Amy Poehler's company, Paper Kite Productions.
We've been friends and colleagues for years, so we know how important it is to feel like someone has your back at work.
And we want to be that for you.
So we're hosting a weekly advice show where we answer all your work-related questions.
Something amazing happened. I got offered my dream job.
How am I supposed to bring this up to him without hurting his feelings? What should I do?
I want to like skip the pleasantries without being an asshole.
Careful, money and friends, they don't mix, babes.
They don't. And don't work with your friends, make your friends at work.
All right, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but that was actually $1 million advice.
Whether you need advice or just love to listen to other people's problems, this show is for you.
Listen and follow Million Dollar Advice, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So when I got to MTV, it was like Mecca. I swoon about that place. I am so lucky I was there when I was. It was a great time to sort of be like young and getting your foot in the business because it was like trial by fire. Mm. You know, it was just like you got thrown in the pool and you figured it out.
Tracy and I wanted to talk to someone who worked at MTV when it was popping during the late 90s, early aughts. Erica Clark is currently an executive producer at Spotify Studios, but between 1996 and 2007, she worked at MTV on iconic shows like Diary and like Cribs. We asked Erica what it was like to work at MTV during its heyday.
My boss, when I was doing Diary of Aaliyah, I was like scared. I was like, why? They're letting me do this. And he was just like, don't forget to press record. You'll be fine. Bye. Like, you know, like he was just like, you got this. And it was just that thing of like being a young creator, having this place that sort of trusted you to do that.
I remember when I was little, when people would ask where I wanted to work, I was always like, MTV, because it was what was cool, it was what was grown up, it was what was pop culture. What drew you to want to work at MTV and stay there for 10 years?
I'm like a pop culture junkie. I was that person that was like, I'm going to watch every single award show.
Yes!
And I would call my best friend at the time, Vanessa, and we'd be on the phone watching the Grammys, and like my mom's boyfriends would call, and I'd be like, call waiting, I don't know her. Like, I would never, like, did what's his face call? No, he didn't. Don't worry about it. I got to see who wins Best New Artist. But then I wanted to work at MTV, and for like 2 years in college, I kept sending applications. I'm like, this will be it. I'm going to do it. And no joke, broadcast news writing class. Y'all remember The View, like the very first season of The View? Mm-hmm. Debbie Matenopoulos was in my broadcast news writing class.
What?
And she was a PA at MTV. And she's like, if you guys, if anyone wants to intern MTV, let me know. I'll like get your resume.
Oh my God.
Wow.
So I was like, I do, I do. And she's like, oh yeah, I'll give you like, you know, no worries. Just give me your resume. The next day, the internship coordinator called me.
Wow.
Like, is so shout out to Debbie Matenopoulos.
What an origin story.
And I remember, I think I was doing Diary of like Aaliyah, and literally she was on the red carpet doing something. And she's like, girl. And I'm like, girl.
Oh,
it was our Whitney, Natalie Cole moment. That was it, you know?
I love it.
What a gift. I completely understand what you mean now.
What shows, MTV shows in particular, of course, would you say epitomized your youth?
I loved The Real World. Like, The Real World was like season one. Don't even. I was just like, are you a drug dealer? Like, I just every time. So I was obsessed with 120 Minutes. I loved the like the alternative music shows. There was a show called Remote Control, which was a great show.
I remember Remote Control.
Remote Control. Yeah. I just watched videos. I would record the video. God, I am 95 years old. I'm about to say, like, my VHS. but, like, The Real World was that thing.
Favorite season of The Real World?
Ooh, Seattle was good when he threw that teddy bear into the water. But I'm still old school. I love the first season. I just loved Heather B. Mm-hmm. I live for Heather. I was like, yes. Heather B and Julie, their friendship was beautiful. I loved it.
That might be one of the first like interracial friendships that I saw like that.
That's another example of Real World right there where they just let them be.
Yeah.
And people are like, that's boring. I'm like, I don't find it boring. I find it exciting because I get to be nosy in someone's life.
You were with MTV from 1996 to 2007. So you saw the development of a bunch of iconic shows. The timing is right so that you saw the shift of MTV from playing primarily music-based content to more reality-based content. What was that shift like?
I think when I was there, it was still music-based because we were doing like Ultrasound. It was like the show called like The Deal That Changed My Life and like Your Cribs, Your Diary. MTV still had their DNA. Year by year, we probably saw it gradually change.
Speaking of Cribs, you were part of the development team for the series. Is that right?
Yes.
Which, thank you for your contribution.
I feel like a patriot. No.
I mean, you are, though. I'm pretty sure you are, because I feel like before that, we knew that celebrities were rich, but we didn't know what that looked like. How did that idea come about?
I remember at one point someone was talking about like something like InStyle and a home tour. This was the time, you know, on MTV, people had an idea and people were like, okay, try it. But at the same time, it wasn't like people were just letting us in their houses.
What? You mean you didn't just show up? And then they just were like, oh, hello, I wasn't expecting you as I sit here in my fancy clothes with my champagne.
That said, though, I think it might have been the first one I did, Steve Harwell of Smash Mouth. Allegedly, his publicist didn't tell him it was a home tour. He thought it was an interview.
What? Oh.
Yes. So that nice man was like, I got to be in, because he lived in Vegas. I got to be in L.A. in like 3 hours. So if you can get it done. But he was just like, I didn't really know this was a home.
Wow. And he let you in his house?
Let me tell you the extent to which y'all would have got put out of my house. I don't know what else to say. Like, you know?
Like Martin.
Exactly. Like, this room is clean.
Why are you here?
Someone got drawers on the floor. You're going to have to come back later. I will say that before we hopped on this call, I went to the YouTubes and I typed in the word Red Man. And the fifth suggested entry was Red Man in TV Cribs.
It seemed like every episode was lifestyles of the rich and the famous, but for our generation. Red Man's episode was the opposite of that. It was like, I'm normal as fuck.
I was in the post for that one. I think when everyone got there, they were like, okay. You know? I think that was that point where people were like, oh, personality. He was just so funny. He was like, sure, come in my house. I'm not going to do anything beyond what I usually do. And Sugar Bear was asleep. Like, that was not, he was not, that was not an act. That's what happened. He had a money box.
Right.
Can I tell you my biggest regret?
Yes.
What? Please.
I don't remember what Cribs I was on at the time, but I missed the Patti LaBelle one. And to this day, today it breaks my heart. I'm happy for the producer. I see you, Sionine Lorenzo. But to this day, she's like, yeah, she cooked for us. And I was like, I know she cooked for you. I know Miss Patti.
She cooked?
She cooked
of course
for him.
She did. It's Miss Patti.
Yeah, you're right.
That is like my biggest Cribs regret, that I didn't get to go to Patti LaBelle's home. So that's but
I mean, it's a pretty cool regret to have.
I feel like that's like peak first world black regret. Is that what
you're Welcome to the club of people who have never been to Patti LaBelle's house.
What is another Cribs episode that you worked on that surprised you?
Richard Branson going to his island in the story.
Oh my God.
Like, don't even, like, that's
wasn't
like
Mariah Carey on that episode?
Mariah Carey was there.
She was just staying at a back house or something.
Just being Mariah Carey, the legend. And let me tell you right now, couldn't have been nicer. What he was like, let me carry that bag for you. I said to him, you are the nicest billionaire I know. I'm like, well, sir, you're the only billionaire I know. Yeah.
Another episode I think about, and I wonder if you worked on, was the Carmen Electra episode.
Yes, sir. Carmen Electra. First off, she at one point was a prince protege, so therefore she becomes a legend always.
Wow. Right, right.
But simple fact of the matter is, her neighbor was Apollonia. And I was, I was dead, D-E-A-D. Yes.
Was she home when y'all were recording?
Apollonia came over, knocked on the door with her dog with one of those cones and was like, hi, I'm Apollonia. And I'm in my mind going, yeah, I'm very well aware you're Apollonia.
Wow.
I was like, we are the world. This is amazing.
We truly are the children.
Like, wow.
That is
like, wow. But yeah. I have nothing but the greatest stories because it's not a regular interview. You are going to people's homes and they are just sort of like,
they feel like you're on their turf. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're on their turf. So please take off your shoes and make sure you don't leave our house dirty. And we never did. Thank you very much.
Aww.
Wonderful stories indeed.
Can I talk to you about one of my favorite pieces of MTV programming ever?
Sure.
You worked with Aaliyah on this episode of Diary that came out right around the time of her death. And Aaliyah was so mysterious. And in this episode, you just got to see her be human. And it came out at a time when we were like really mourning her. So what did it mean to make something so intimate about someone so iconic that was timed so closely to when she passed?
You know, it puts a lot of things in perspective because you're not thinking anything like that's going to happen. She was very mysterious. And I think just private. When we were doing Diary, it was just one person with a camera. We were miking them. We were fly on the wall. And that was the that was the objective and the point. We were really embedded with her and her brother and then her team, who were so protective and loving of her. Mm. You sort of wanted to also respect that, because you know it's like this young woman had lived a lot of life already at such a young age, and I was just so impressed by what a professional she was. And I also, as this young black woman who carried herself so well, I wanted to sort of like respect that as another black woman. You know, to go back to your question, it was bizarre and it was sad, and it was one of those things again where we had just filmed with her and we wanted to be as respectful as possible. You know, I love that show. I wanted to show the fun she was having because she truly loved her fans. Like, that was not put on. She really loved her team. She could not have been kinder and more what you want, like a pop star to be. I was just like, you know,
when you were talking earlier about making sure that it was respectful and respecting like her status as a pop icon and as a black woman, I think that all of that really came across very well, which is why I think Diary was just such like a more intimate sit down and like conversation. So you're actually in a really unique position because you were a part of like the first wave of MTV reality shows, working on shows like Cribs and Diary. But then you're also part of that second wave that includes really big franchises, including Real Housewives of New Jersey. And you worked on season one?
Yes.
I feel like the difference of working on a show like Diary and then going to a show like Real Housewives of New Jersey had to be jarring for you.
That was a whole different ballgame. I produced Danielle.
Oh my God.
Yes. That lady made sure when the crews came over, were there snacks and was there water? She was so nice. Like, I am not kidding you. She was so nice to the crew. But yeah, that was, and I was there for the table flip before you asked. Yes.
So when you saw Teresa Giudice flip that table, were you just like, cut, check, Emmy, like, give it to us? Or did you know what you were watching?
My first thought was, oh Lord, did some glass fly on anybody? Right, like I ran out.
Are we gonna get sued?
And then I was like, oh wow, all these cameras got all this. It was wild because I always used to joke with a couple friends that like one day I'm just gonna flip a table. And I remember, and I remember calling one of my friends afterwards and I'm like, yo, the dream just came true. I just saw it. She's like, what do you care? I'm like, Teresa just flipped the table. Like it was just, it was literally such a surprise. You don't expect someone to flip a table. Like I was like, I was like, wow, maybe I'm not built for this. This is deep. Like, it's wild. My tombstone will say, and she was there for the table flip. Like that one.
Can we have more fun facts and like juicy tidbits and behind the scenes stories?
I just want a hit list.
Yes.
The most embarrassing is it was Usher. It was record release at a club on Bowery. I'm trying to get a shot of the whole club. So I get on his table. What? And I accidentally kick a bottle of Cristal off the table.
Oh my gosh, that's like $1 million.
And it's Lil Jon's bottle of Cristal. And like, oh my God. And he looked at me with just such sadness in his eyes. And I was like... And I was like, I'm sorry.
Was he like, no, no, no.
No. Like, let me tell you, that okay went away real quick. He was just like, he went back to Lil Jon that was like,
Lil Jonathan.
Like, oh, man. Shit. Like,
he went back to like, John.
Oh, no. Like, ma'am, really? And he was just like, and then Usher just looked, he was like, it's okay, you can afford it.
Oh my gosh.
So, what do you think made the shows like Diary and Cribs and all the MTV programming from that era so resonant? And why do you think that we're still talking about them now?
I think a lot of it was the access at that point. Yeah. Probably felt like very kind of new. And I think with Diary was another example of the fact that like it wasn't like necessarily just a press tour. It was like I'm at their house. You know, they're taking their dog walking. They're visiting family.
It was like proto Instagram Live.
Yeah, and it was like behind the scenes. It's sort of like it wasn't as glossy. It resonates because it was before social media. This was not something people did every single day. And they had to decide, I'm going to let you be embedded with me. And I don't think any of us thought like, oh, like we're going to be talking about Cribs 20 years later. Yeah. This is wild. It's 20 years.
MTV, especially when you were working there, was the center of everything considered youth culture. And I don't think MTV is that place anymore necessarily. Like, I don't know if people are going to MTV now in the way that they used to, like in the 90s and the 2000s. What do you think that our culture is missing without MTV being what it was?
Things have changed so much that I don't know if one thing can be the defining place for youth culture now. When the media landscape and when society and culture gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, one entity can't take it all. Everything is everywhere. We have like influencer culture, or is it, you know, you're on Fairfax in LA, is it like the hype beast? Like, is that where you're finding stuff? It's everywhere. How do you keep up? Like, where is that thing, that touchstone?
This has been illuminating, enlightening, and such a joy.
Where can people find you on social media?
Oh, you can find me at Miss Erica Clark. That's MissErikaClarke.
Learn something from this. Learn something from this. Learn something from this.
have now come to that part of the party where we try to make Tyra Banks proud and learn something from this. So, Joshua, did we
learn something from this?
I think we did learn something from this.
What did we have learned?
One of the things that I keep thinking about is how much of a fool's errand it is to try to establish a business that is the center of youth culture. At its prime, MTV catered to young millennials, and like the Zoomers, they don't really fuck with it like we did, you know? And so what does it mean for a station built on youth culture if they're no longer relevant with the youth? And I think that that's a problem that's intrinsic with the model, right? Like if you're building a media organization or a company or whatever, and you want it to be centered in what youth culture by definition is always going to change depending on the next kids that come up and what they're experiencing and what they're going through. And they're going to either rebel and want to be in opposition to like what the people that came ahead of them are. And so the fact that MTV doesn't exist in the same way that it did when we were younger, I think it used to make me sad. But now I think that it makes me excited because the kids, the youth, they're going to take what they're going to take and what they consider cool. And they're going to establish a new set of rules and a new set of kids that are cool and a new set of music that they want to listen to. And that music is going to be what they wake their kids up on Saturday to cleaning. You know, and the cycle of life goes on.
Lil Yachty.
Can you imagine somebody waking their kids up with Lil Yachty to clean on Saturday?
No. I cannot.
But one day it will be so.
Another thing that I learned is that the world and how we express youth culture today would be so different without MTV. Like, even though Appointment TV is dead, you know, like even though MTV doesn't play like the kind of role in the lives of kids today like it did ours, it still sort of like guided the things that like we wanted out of life, right? Like all these aspirational shows, like that sort of like made us so hungry for more exposure to the lives of celebrities, which we get with social media, for better, for worse, sometimes for much worse.
Worse.
So, like, all of this and talking to Erica made me wonder, like, what would life have been like if there was no MTV? You know, like, what would we be doing now? Well, I mean, I don't know. Is it a butterfly effect thing?
Yeah. Like, at that time, we didn't have the technology for where we got our music and pop culture stuff from to be democratized. I mean, there were how many channels in the 80s? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
if you didn't have cable like me, there were four.
You know? And so MTV played a really, really pivotal role in being this large gathering place where everyone came. I mean, where white people came and then eventually black people came to share what they thought was cool and share the music that they were working on and the music that they thought was good. But now there's not as much of a need. And I think that that's okay.
I also learned that they used to play music videos, which is just like wild. Back Issue was a production of Pineapple Street Studios. Woo!
This show was created and is hosted by Tracy Clayton
and Josh Gwynn. Our lead producers are Josh Gwynn and Emmanuel Hapsis.
Our managing producer is John Asante.
Our senior editor is Lila Day.
Our associate producers are Alexis Moore and Zandra Ellen.
Our intern is Brianna Garrett. Special thanks to Gabrielle Young.
Our executive producers are Jenna Weiss-Berman and Max Linsky.
This show features music by Don Will. You can follow him on all the socials at DJ Don Will. And you can follow me on the socials at Brokey McPoverty.
And me, Josh, at Regarding Josh. Subscribe to this podcast wherever free podcasts are sold. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. And in the spirit of TRL, if you like this podcast, vote it up. Give us a 5-star review. It really matters.
See you next week. Woo! Everybody keeps calling me a house shoe, but I tell them I'm
girl, a slipper.
Girl,
you a slide. You a slide. Don't let nobody tell you different.